Let's read again in Proverbs chapter 7. Proverbs chapter 7. And we can read to begin with verses 6 and 7. Proverbs 7, verses 6 and 7. For at the window of my house, I looked through my casement and beheld among the simple ones. I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding. I'm sure many of us have seen these wildlife programs, which are so beautifully filmed these days with remarkable technology. Usually there's a very soothing voice in the background. The ones I used to watch had a man called David Attenborough, and he had a very sort of educated English accent. It sounded very appealing. You almost, felt you were there with him. And he would describe this animal, perhaps, and show the animal, zoom in on the animal, show it walking around, doing what it does, and explaining some of its habits, and then usually go on to speak of some of the dangers, and usually one of these dangers would arise and come into a camera view, perhaps at a distance initially, and then the drama built as one camera followed the animal, the prey, and one camera followed the bigger animal, the hunter. And as they got closer and closer, usually the first animal seemed to be just totally ignorant and innocent and had no idea what was ahead until it was too late and the animal was eaten up and killed. We have something very similar in this chapter before us, but it's not animals that are in camera view, it's people. It's people like you and me. You read here this viewer looking through a lens. In verse 6, at the window of my house, I looked through my casement and beheld. And we want to look at this scene and the various parties in it and the various stages in it as it moves towards, sadly, what was a very easy kill. But before we do so, obviously, this is a very graphic and solemn warning against sexual sin, giving what belongs to God and a marital partner to another person. And it's amazing how much of Proverbs is devoted to this. About a third of the first 9 chapters are taken up with warnings about this kind of sin. But of course, it's also a warning not just against physical adultery, but against spiritual adultery. Proverbs and many of the prophets use physical adultery as a metaphor, as a picture of spiritual adultery. You think of Hosea, who portrayed Israel as somebody who was giving herself away to anyone and everyone apart from God, really describing her as a prostitute. You also have in Revelation the world described as a great harlot as well. So, yes, this is about sexual sin, but there's a bigger picture here as well that we can bear in mind. Maybe some of us, through age or whatever, are not so liable to this sin, but we are all liable to being seduced by the world and being allured and attracted by its charms and brought into an illicit relationship with this world's offerings and sins. So, yes, it's physical, but it's also spiritual. Another thing to note before we start is the focus here, the hunter here is described as the strange woman, the strange woman. You see that in verse 5. And that might seem a bit sexist, maybe to some. Why single out a woman? Are not men as equally liable to this kind of preying on others in this way? And the answer, of course, is yes. Equally so, if not more so. Why then use the example of a woman? Well, there are two reasons. One is that the first 9 chapters of Proverbs are set up with a contrast. And on the one hand, you have this strange woman. And it's interesting, the word strange is the word foreign. It's a foreign woman. And basically what's being said here is, this is somebody who is estranged from God, who is foreign to God. The first few chapters of Genesis depict all of God's creatures, all of God's creation in a marital relationship with him, effectively, in a perfect, close, intimate relationship with him. But sin came in and estranged God's whole creation and all his creatures from him. Therefore, this is really a description of all who are without God, all who are living Christless in this world. Such are strange, are estranged, are foreign, are distant from God. So you have her on the one side, the strange woman. And on the other side, you have Lady Wisdom, another female. So that's one of the reasons why this bad character, the antagonist, as it were, is set up as female. It's to contrast it with another female, a bad female and a good female. And the second reason is that Proverbs are addressed from a father to his sons. It's Solomon who is writing them, and he's specifically addressing his sons. Again, that doesn't mean this is not a book for women. It's just that was the context. That was the exact circumstances of the writing of this book. The words are equally applicable to women, of course. But because it was originally couched in this father-son setting, therefore it was much more appropriate for this hunter to be depicted as a woman. So it's not sexist. Another thing to note here is that this account is as explicit as can be short of pornography. And I think that's something to really notice when the Bible does deal with this sin. It never depicts sin in a way to attract, but always to alarm. It never depicts sin in a way that is enticing, but hopefully also this evening, off-putting, deterring. And the last thing I want to say before getting into this is, if we're to apply this to the modern day, yes, there are physical issues in our modern day. Yes, there's still this classic, you might say, sin scenario of a woman and a man coming together. But we have, of course, the additional complication and hazard of the internet and internet pornography. And these words equally apply there. The same characteristics, the same dangers, the same scenarios are there, though mediated through pixels rather than face-to-face. I hope that comes across this evening. I'm not going to focus on that so much, but I want you to be thinking, as it were, on a parallel track, that this is equally applicable to that more, you might say, private form of this sin. But first of all, let's look at the easy prey. The easy prey, the easy victim. As the camera zooms in, it picks out from a crowd of young people, we're told here, a young man void of understanding. And he's in a group that's described as the simple ones. That doesn't mean they were uneducated. Of course not. What it means literally in the Hebrew is open and spacious. And it's describing the mind. This is somebody who's got an empty mind, as it were. An open mind. A mind that has written over it, everyone and everything enter. This is not a mind that has been given a protective door, as it were. It's a mind without any kind of filter or obstacle in front of it. A mind that will let anything in at any time from any person. And as we'll see towards the end of the sermon, that's the opposite of what Proverbs describes as a wise person, because the wise person, as we'll see, is somebody whose mind is packed full and who has every filter and protection and obstacle possible in order to keep out and protect and defend oneself. But that's how this person is described. Simple, naive, might be another word. Easily persuaded, easily tempted, easily swayed, easily deceived. And this camera person here says, behold. It's like this person really stood out. Yeah, it was just one of many, but somehow this one really stood out. A young man void of understanding. Probably thinking he's as smart as anyone around, but here the camera, as it were, is an X-ray, and it sees into the heart and the mind and the soul and comes to this verdict, this description of someone who gets led into this sin, someone who's left their mind wide open, someone who's taken away every defense, someone who refuses every filter, someone who is easily led and persuaded. Hope that doesn't describe you. If it does, you are in great danger. It's not an attractive description, is it, to be called void of understanding, and you can have every qualification in the world and be void of understanding. There's a big difference between knowledge and wisdom, isn't there? Anyway, this is the victim. This is setting up the scene. And then the scene is described a bit more. That's what we come to secondly, a dangerous place. We've got an easy prey. We've got a dangerous place. Because we read here where this man was. So the camera, as it were, is moving out, beginning to pan across the scene. And we begin to see the circumstances, the background, the geography, the features that are surrounding him. And we read in verse 8, well, first of all, in verse 7, he's among the simple ones, the youth, so he's in bad company. If there's something worse than being a simple one, it's being with other simple ones. And that is the case here. This is someone who has chosen bad friends and is keeping bad company. And it seems that they're walking along, and he's led into a dangerous place, but then he goes even further than the rest of them. He, as it were, breaks away from the crowd. They led him, as it were, to the edge, but then he goes over the edge. Because in verse 8, we're told he's passing through the street near her corner. Near her corner, not just bad friends, but he's in a bad place. Not just dangerous friends, but he's in a dangerous place here. He has perhaps been driven by curiosity. Just going to have a look. Heard about this woman, I've heard about this place. No harm in looking, I mean, I'll never fall. Or if we're to make it more contemporary, I mean, I mean, I'll just click once. I'll just visit that website once. Proximity to sin increases the chance of sin, doesn't it? Curiosity kills more than cats. It kills souls. He went the way to her house. Her reputation was already known. He seemed to know where he was going, although in many ways he did not know where he was going. If only he knew, you might say. And it's just, I think what you get the picture of here is somebody just aimlessly ambling along into the most horrendous danger, isn't it? With no discernment or awareness of how vulnerable he really is. Familiarity with sin weakens resistance to it, doesn't it? It says, you can see what's coming together here is the opportunity to sin and the temptation to sin. It's a bad thing to have a temptation to sin. It's an even worse thing to then have the opportunity to sin. It's like the spark and the gunpowder coming together. That's what happens here. And really what Solomon is saying here is, don't go anywhere near these conditions. Don't put yourself in such a place. Don't take the risk. Don't bring together desire and opportunity, because the inevitable will happen. So we have the easy prey. We have the dangerous place. And let me just say about our cell phones, friends, we don't need a red light area now. We've got it in our hands. And I don't think any of us really, really realize what a danger we carry around with us. It's none of us can safely carry one of these devices without every possible level of accountability. Within our marriage, perhaps with a friend or an elder. But if this was to be rewritten today, that's the focus I think this passage would have. Realize what a dangerous place you have in the very palm of your hand, in the pocket that you carry around with you. So, thirdly, here we have the dark conditions. Again, if we think of that wildlife scene, what we're really seeing is the sun beginning to go down and the worst kinds of animals beginning to appear. You've got these solemn words in verse 9, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. It's a very solemn picture here. Really, four words for increasing darkness. As the sun is going down, as the sun is setting, we see here the darkness deepening. The darkness really falling upon this life, the sun setting on this life. And it's all building up this dramatic picture of this easy prey being in such a dangerous place, in such dark conditions, and then what appears? The hunter. And this strange woman is described as a crafty, a skillful hunter. Notice, after verse 9, we read, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night, and behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. And the word means crafty or skillful of heart. This is an experienced hunter, in other words. There met him a woman. She's got camouflage on, as it were. She's got the attire of a heart. She looks She's attractively dressed. She's wearing the latest fashions, the latest paint, the latest perfumes. And she meets him suddenly. It's like she springs out of her lair. Behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot and subtle of heart. And what you get the impression of here is somebody who's been lurking, someone who's been planning this, somebody who's been plotting this. This hasn't happened, as it were, by accident. It's happened, as it were, by accident on the victim's side, but not the hunter. This is someone who has done this many, many times before, who knows all the tricks of the trade, who knows all the ways to succeed, to get her prey. She knows exactly what buttons to press, what appearance to communicate, what words to speak. And again, we probably hardly realize the danger that we are in day by day. In such a wicked world, it's amazing this doesn't actually happen more often to us, but it could happen at any time. And if we are in this dangerous spiritual condition, putting ourselves in danger's way, then this danger may inevitably come into our life. Behold, it's so sudden, it's so unexpected. It's ambush, it's surprise, the element of surprise. It's doubtful this young man went out this night with the intention of eventually ending up in the arms of this woman. And yet that's where his course took him. Behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. She's loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lies in wait at every corner. You sometimes might ask yourself, why would anyone do this? Why would anyone be like this in the world? What would motivate a strange woman or a strange man like this? Well, in some cases, it's just pure selfish lust, isn't it? There's a pleasure in it that is just selfishly pursued, regardless of the consequences to anyone else. Sometimes there's a desire to corrupt another innocent person. Sadly, that too can motivate many wicked men and many wicked women. Just that basic, hideous desire to ruin another's life. It might be money. Of course, that's what drives the porn industry, isn't it? Money, business. It might be revenge. Someone might do this with another person to get back at another person. It might be just to chalk up another victim, another statistic, another notch on the headboard. I've certainly seen these motives in various situations throughout my life. Let's not deny reality. Let's be aware of the serious danger of the malice and the wickedness that drives many strange men and strange women. And God forbid it would ever be us that are such. And she's powerful. She caught him, we read in verse 13. Does she ever miss when it gets to this point? Does she ever miss? She caught him. She's more powerful than he is. Here we have a crafty hunter. But then we see her tempting lure, her tempting snare, how she draws him in off the street. And she it's just amazing how skillful this strange woman is And yet, again, we hear the same things, maybe in our own consciences, maybe from other people making such arguments. But notice the first thing she says is this. Well, actually, the first thing she does in verse 13 is she caught him and kissed him. It's interesting, that, isn't it? Before she starts reasoning, she, as it were, goes over his reason, she touches his senses. She begins, as it were, she stimulates the hormones, to be blunt. And she knows that if she can get that going, then reasoning, it should be really easy after that. This physical contact, this intimacy, is already beginning to weaken any kind of reasonable and rational defense he may have. But he's still clearly got some resistance because he doesn't just simply walk along with her. She has to persuade him, and listen to how she lures him, how she draws him in. The first thing she says is this: you can have me and religion. You can have sin and faith. Verse 14, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. This is a religious, she's portraying herself as a woman of faith, a woman of religion, somebody who sacrifices, who pays vows. She's saying, we can do this and still be religious. Look at me. Isn't that what the devil will always say to us? You can have the world and God. You can serve God and mammon. You can have a foot in both camps. You can do this on a Sunday and all the rest of the week. She says you can have the world and religion. Then secondly, she says, I've just been waiting for you. You are the one for me. You are so important to me. Therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently, to seek thy face, and I have found thee. What's she saying? She's saying, there is only one person for me, and it's you. When I went out tonight, I was just thinking of you. I was looking for you. You're the one that I want, and no one else. Of course, anyone would have done. But this is a lie. And he believes her. Oh, I'm special. I feel important now. This woman really wants me. She has such desire for me. Someone who appreciates me, who cares for me, who's interested in me, just wants to see my face, wants to spend time with me. Yeah. I'm very important to her. Whereas he's really just a piece of garbage to be disposed of after she's used him. But anyway, that's the lie. Third lie, third lure. She says, you are going to have unparalleled pleasure. Notice how she appeals to his sensuality. In verse 16, I've decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with the fine linen of Egypt. I perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. She's saying, this is going to be such an extra special sensory experience. You'll never have had such happiness and pleasure in all your life. That's what lies ahead here, she says. Nothing but pleasure. Every sense is appealed to. Then her fourth lie. This is real love. This is real love. Notice verse 18. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let's solace ourselves with loves. It's pure, unadulterated lust. And yet she says this is real love. This is pure. This is almost heavenly, the way she depicts it. It's actually from hell. As all lust is, It's nothing to do with heaven, from which all true love comes. But she calls this love. She feels that he feels this is love. He's persuaded that this is love. And then her fifth lure is, no one will ever know. No one will ever find out. She says, verse 19, the good man, that's her husband obviously, or her master, is not at home. He's gone a long journey. You can do this, in other words, and there will be no consequences. Live for the moment. Don't think about tomorrow. Don't think about being caught. This need not ever happen. It's just you and me. No one else will find out. We can do this privately, secretly, unseen, unknown, and go on our way. And then lastly, she basically says, and no one will be hurt. He's taken a bag of money with him, will come home at the time appointed. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. With her much fair speech, with her reasoning. It's a fatal combination, isn't it? What a lure. Sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it, to some of us? We've heard these lies. Maybe we've told these lies. And with much fair speech, we've been caused to yield or caused another to yield. If we haven't spoken it, we've probably thought it. It's a tempting lure. But then I want you to notice the warning drone. It's like the camera has been getting closer and closer. We're now overhearing the conversation. It's zoomed right in. We are eavesdropping upon this to and fro. Then it comes to this verdict. She caused him to yield. And then it's as if the camera zooms way out, like a drone lifts up and gives a whole new perspective. And we see new things in the scene. What do we see here as the drone rises? And many, of course, of you know that the army and the armed forces use drones now to see what's ahead. They send up these little helicopters and with cameras, and they can see without taking risks themselves. This is really what's happening here. This drone is rising, the camera, the viewpoint is going high up in order to show what lies ahead. It all looks so good, it all looks so promising, it all looks so enjoyable, it all looks so pleasant. But what lies ahead? When she caused him to yield with the flattering of her lips, she forced him. He goes after her straightway. And here's what we see. We see an ox here, and we see a butcher's here. That's what the wide angle shows us. That's what the bird's eye shows us. Solomon says it's like an ox going to the slaughter. The ox hasn't got a clue. He has no idea. He's not thinking of that at all, but those who can see, and from this divine perspective, we can see in this sin, at the end of this process lies slaughter. And then there's another image. We have here a fool. And over here we have stocks. Here's this fool who's thinking he's going to a pleasure palace, but the big picture tells us he's going to prison. He's going to bondage. He's going to a place where he'll be stuck. Perhaps even be a source of mockery and laughter to others. And then there's a third image we see. It's as a bird over here hasting to the snare over here. The ox, the fool, and the bird have no idea, but we do, because we can see from above here. And what a blessing here, as it were, God sends up this warning drone in our lives that even at this point where we are yielding, where we are going along with this sin, that he shows us the end, the destination. in order to, as it were, give one last call, flee adultery, flee uncleanness. But it has no effect. Here, he doesn't see, and it results in, you might call, an easy kill. An easy kill. It's one of the easiest kills this woman's probably ever had. We're told in verse 23, he doesn't know that it's for his life. He doesn't know. He doesn't think. He's not aware. He thinks he's going to life. He doesn't realize he's losing it. He loses his life. It's an easy kill. The dart strikes through his liver. He doesn't think of the consequences. He doesn't think about her record. He doesn't consider where this goes. Solomon ends. It's just such a, in a way, it's a horrible story. In another way, it's so beautiful because it's coming from a father's heart to his sons, from a parent's heart to his children. You feel that especially in these last words. Hearken unto me, therefore, O you children. He's saying, listen to my story. Watch the film. See the movie. Let it be imprinted on your mind. Let the drone show you the end. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths. Don't even go there. Don't even end up in that conversation. For she has cast down many wounded. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. This isn't just weak men, weak women. This is the strongest. This is the mightiest. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. As one translation paraphrased it, she runs a halfway house to hell and fits you out with a shroud and a coffin. Fan the flames of lust and they may never go out. Here is the end of many. And notice that. This is a real warning passage. Of course it is. It's warning us of the end of many who have gone down this way. But not all. Not all. That's important to emphasize. The emphasis in this passage is on warning, on cause and effect, on this leading to that. But there's comfort in these last words, I believe, though also warning. Cast down many wounded. Many strong men have been slain by her. But it doesn't mean that someone who's succumbed to this sin is finished necessarily. Yes, many are, but not all. I wouldn't like anyone here to go away this evening who has committed this sin, either physically or with the internet, with the cell phone, or in their hearts or in their minds. I don't want anyone going away saying, well, I'm in utter despair. There's no hope for me. Oh, yes, you're in great danger. You've followed an extremely dangerous path. No one wants to experiment with that. No one wants to try this out. But if you do, and you do manage to not make it a habit, which is extremely difficult to do once this road is taken, there is forgiveness available. There is power available to refuse this and to break from this. If not, I wouldn't stand here and preach. And to have nothing to offer those who have been so ensnared and so entrapped and so fallen, I'd do anything else in the world other than that. I'd be an utter counsel of despair. So yes, take the warning. No, don't even try this. But if you have, and you're still alive, there's a way out by the rocky road of repentance and faith in Jesus Christ. Filthy though this scene is, it can be washed clean. You can be purged entirely and completely from it. You can be given power so that you never go down that way again. You can recover. But again, heed the passage. Heed the passage. Many have been slain. Many have gone to that house and ended up in hell. So keep the balance right. Take the warning and take the gospel and use them to keep you or use them to deliver you. And just ask yourself tonight, am I at any point in this movie, in this wildlife program, and so wild, we might call it a wild death program because that's what it's about. Are you in here? Are you at any point in this process? Are you this easy prey? Are you in this dangerous place? Are you in these dark conditions? Is a crafty hunter after you, either physically or through pixels? Are you being lured and tempted? Is the warning drone flying high in your life, showing you what lies ahead, as it were, a last call? Or have you been an easy kill? Well, there's still a way to life through Jesus Christ. Amen. Let's pray.